Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
This conference is all about leaving no one behind and particularly focusing on the tangled knot of complex problems and challenges that are primarily taking place in the global south.
The Secretary General of the Commonwealth of Nations calls for solutions to the disproportionate impact of economic and environmental challenges on developing members of the organization.
This conference is really, really very significant in that, the membership is 120 member states. Now, that means is one of the single biggest delegates that Uganda has ever hosted in recent times.
The week-long conference of the non-aligned movement ends in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
We have written the Attorney General to ensure that he should make available the following information. One, how much Ethiopian Airlines brought on the table as their equity contribution. Secondly, he should give evidence on profits accrued since 2014.
And Malawian civil society group demands an independent audit of the state's airline following an agreement with Ethiopia Airlines. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Uganda, Patricia Scotland, the Secretary General of the Commonwealth of Nations, is calling for an expedited solution to what she says is the disproportionate impact of economic and environmental challenges on developing members of the organization. She's also calling for more targeted international support for countries that are mostly affected by climate change. The call came during the just-ended Non-Aligned Movement Summit in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. For more about her call, I reached Patricia Scotland in Kampala, Uganda. Here is part one of the conversation.
This conference is all about leaving no one behind and particularly focusing on the tangled knot of complex problems and challenges that are primarily taking place in the global south. And many of our developing countries, as you know, have made considerable progress to improve the well-being of their people, but they are now bearing the brunt of a myriad of crises, with the lingering effects of COVID-19, the soaring debt, the inflation pressures, and the intensifying climate extremes and disasters. And it's pushing many of our countries right to the edge. So to tackle these overlapping challenges about which we have spoken on a number of occasions, we need more cooperation and solidarity than ever before. And the voice of the non-aligned movement is essential, and the Commonwealth stands as a trusted partner in achieving our shared vision for a peaceful, just, and sustainable future for all. And
talking about money, the Secretariat has been calling what some people say the disproportionate impact of economic and environmental challenges on development Commonwealth countries. Talk to me briefly about this concern.
Well, number one, we've been saying we now need a different approach, making an assessment to say, you know, if you've got fiscal rectitude, your GDP will rise and you'll be able to meet all your sustainable development goals. We know that that is not so. These exogenous shocks that we've suffered, the climate crises, the COVID-19, then followed by the disruption of our food security as a result of what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, and now what's happening in Palestine, and all these exogenous shocks are out with what most of the countries could have expected, and not caused by them either. So we have said we need to change the approach we have we have to understand innate vulnerability, which is not predicated on an act or an omission caused by you. These are things to which you are subject, and that vulnerability has to be taken into account when they're talking about the terms upon which you get money by way of loan or you get overseas development aid. And we cannot have this old position anymore. So, you know, we've been pushing hard to say we now need a universal vulnerability index so that when you come to look at your fiscal position, they'll say, well, actually, this country is vulnerable. It's small. It's been disproportionately impacted by the climate crisis. It has been subjected to disproportionate poor effects, for instance, for COVID. Many of our small island developing states are heavily dependent on tourism. Because of COVID, their borders were locked down. Some of them are 70% reliant on tourism. So if no tourists, no money. So this universal vulnerability index, to understand vulnerability and to take it into account, is really, really important. And we've also been pushing to say that we need to get more climate finance, because the countries who've suffered the worst impacts of the climate crisis and who have contributed the least have the most to pay. And you know that we've had, what, more than 676,000 deaths since 1991. It's affecting more than 189 million people annually. And since 1991, 79% of the recorded deaths and 97% of the affected people were in developing countries. So Africa, look at Cyclone Freddy, the Caribbean, Hurricane Maria, Hurricane Dorian, the Pacific, Cyclone Kevin, and Cyclone Lola. And it goes on and on and on. So we need to turn that back. And you know that the Commonwealth created the Climate Finance Access Hub with just $7.8 million. We have already delivered into the hands of our member states $322 million with another $500 million in the pipeline. But you and I both know that's not enough.
Patricia Scotland is the Secretary General of the Commonwealth of Nations. She spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Join us on Sunday for the conclusion of the conversation. Still in Uganda, the week-long conference of the Non-Aligned Movement has ended in the capital, Kampala, Friday. Representatives of over 90 nations of the 120-member organization attended the summit. Key discussions focus on major issues, including the need to reform the international financial system and ways to expedite efforts to actualize the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Sam Omara is the head of public diplomacy at the Ugandan Foreign Affairs Ministry. He talks to me about the significance and the anticipated impact of the just-ended conference of the Non-Aligned Movement.
This conference is really, really very significant. The membership is 120 member states. Now, that means it's one of the single biggest delegates that Uganda has ever hosted in recent times. We've hosted before the Commonwealth heads of governments, but it had only 54 members. This one has 120 members, so that's quite significant. It's also a sign of confidence in Uganda, as well as in Uganda's leadership on key global issues. I also know that since Uganda will be assuming the chairmanship, it means that Uganda will be able to follow up on the decisions that will have been made by the heads of states and governments of the member states of the Non-Aligned Movement.
Some people are wondering whether the discussions currently ongoing will try to find solutions to the ongoing conflict between Hamas and Israel in Gaza, as well as the ongoing tensions between Somalia and Ethiopia.
The conference has got its key issues that had been programmed prior, and those key issues include the review of implementation of Agenda 2030 for sustainable development and the SDGs, especially the need to accelerate mobilization of financial resources and technology for developing countries. It also includes, especially in the Economic and Social Affairs Committee, the need to reform the international financial systems so as to provide affordable finances for strategic infrastructure and industrialization for non-member states, as well as promoting greater market access for products and services. Of course, not forgetting climate change, how to mitigate and adapt. But in the political committee, definitely the issue of Palestine was discussed. And I'm happy to note that the member states, as of now, have agreed on and adopted a document on Palestine. That means that the member states have got a common position.
What about the issue with the Horn of Africa region, where people are expressing concern about the agreement recently signed between Ethiopia and Somaliland, which Somalia is unhappy about, creating tension about it? Some people are talking about whether the NAM conference will take it up to try to find a solution to this tension.
Now, on that one, there has been a side event, which is an IGAD emergency meeting. The meeting, as we speak now, is ongoing, and the concerned parties are all involved in the engagements. And I cannot comment on it right now because the meeting has not yet ended.
Dr. Omara, what so far are your major takeaways of this NAM conference?
As far as we have gone now, it is commendable that the member states, first of all, were able to agree on a document on the issue of Palestine, because the negotiations were, the discussions and the engagements were really tough. But we are happy that that is a major plus for the entire conference in Uganda. Also, the fact that the member states are looking at reforming the international financial system so that they can be able to access affordable finances. You know that most countries have complained of the high rates of loans, and so the member states are discussing how can they achieve this. And as of now, the discussions have been very constructive, and we are hopeful that the outcome of that discussion will certainly be a milestone on NAM's contribution, or on the 19th summit's contribution to global affairs.
Sam Omara is the head of public diplomacy at the Ugandan Foreign Affairs Ministry. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In Tanzania, the governing Chama cha Mapinduzi, or CCM, has appointed Emmanuel Nchimbi as the new Secretary General of the party. His appointment follows the recent abrupt resignation of Daniel Chongolo in November. Nchimbi, who is a diplomat, is also the director of the CCM's intra-party polls. He's expected to get the party ready for the next general election in 2025. Accepting his position, the new General Secretary called for unity and pledged his commitment to carrying out plans of the group. For analysis and the latest development, I reach Faraja Lugumi. He is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam.
Nchimbi is, yes, is a career diplomat,
and he grew up under the hands of several presidents, starting with Benjamin Mkapa, later with Jakaya Kikwete, and now, and I think he felt out of favor of President Magufuli, but later on he was appointed ambassador of Tanzania to Egypt and to Brazil, and now he was recalled back home. And after the resignation of the previous or the former Secretary General Daniel Chongolo, many people had speculations. And one of the persons who was mentioned by many analysts was Emmanuel Nchimbi, because of his political career in the party and also in the country, and the way he has pulled the respect from the public.
But some people are wondering whether he has what it takes as a career diplomat to wrestle in the political system of Tanzania.
Yes, they are right. They are right on the following grounds. First, you see, in 2015, the ruling party CCM was in serious factions, and he belonged to a very prominent politician, Edward Lowassa. He was in that camp. And if you can recall correctly, he was also punished by the party. So he has no enough support within the party, but the president has decided to pick him as the right wing person to support her in the career, in the politics. But secondly, Nchimbi is a career diplomat, as you have said, but also Nchimbi had some bad relations with some of the bigwigs within the ruling party, and people assume or presume maybe he will have some difficult times to work with some of the people in the ruling party because of his historical background. But still, some people are optimistic. They say he knows very well his party compared to the predecessor, and they are saying maybe he can strategize better than the predecessor because of his background in the party.
Farajam, the chairperson of the NEC, Samia Suluhu Hassan, the president, expressed confidence in the collaboration between the party's Deputy Secretary General Anna Marie Ngimacha and the new Secretary General to propel the party forward. But the question a lot of people are also asking is Dr. Nchimbi the first choice of Dr. Samia Suluhu Hassan, the president, or she was forced to go to the next best thing for the party's sake?
Yes, the worries that people have the basis, because it seems the decision of the chairperson to pick Paul Makonda angered many politicians in the party, because he was not the person who was picked or favored by many members from the National Executive Committee. So that decision of the president to pick Paul Makonda as the publicity secretary of the ruling party did not augur well with most of the members of the National Executive Committee. So this time it seems she had to act on pressure of the members of the National Executive Committee to pick the person that members wanted and not herself. And that might be the challenge to her, because she might have thought of another person, but the members of the National Executive Committee had put pressures on her to say, no, this time you have to pick someone who is more acceptable by the members of the CCM on the mainland, on Tanzania mainland, thinking that he will to address the problems that happened before. You see, there were some scandals that were ushered on the previous Secretary General, now with the fear that the party might have some factions.
Faraja Lugumi is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. A Malawian civil society group is demanding an independent audit of the state airline following an agreement with Ethiopian Airlines. The Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives, or CDEDI, says its investigations show that the agreement is lopsided and does not favor the Malawian taxpayer. But industry observers say the deal is beneficial to efforts by the administration to revive the ailing airline industry in Malawi. But Sylvester Namiwa, executive director of the CDEDI, tells me that his organization is not convinced that the agreement benefits the public.
We have written the Attorney General to ensure that he should make available the following information. One, how much Ethiopian Airlines brought on the table as their equity contribution. Secondly, he should give evidence on profits accrued since 2014 when this arrangement was made. Thirdly, they should explain, apart from the prestige of having a purported airline, what is it that the country is benefiting? Because from what we have gathered, this company does not declare dividends, let alone make public its financial statements as per the dictates of the public-private partnership joint ventures.
What was the major reason why you are calling for this audit or investigation?
We used to have Air Malawi. So Ethiopian Airlines came in to take over management of Air Malawi. So we are asking the Attorney General to say, we want to build on the good way we have started, the remarkable, and in fact is making a remarkable progress to recover the money that was stolen from the public base. So on Malawi Airlines, we want the Attorney General to help us exercise our right to information using the access to information by explaining the following. One, he should give evidence as to how much the Ethiopian Airlines brought on the table as equity contribution. Secondly, he should explain why, besides government having 51% shareholding, the government does not make decisions, because the day-to-day running of this company is in the hands of Ethiopian Airlines. Thirdly, we need to know, apart from the prestige of having a purported airline, what is that we are benefiting in the sense that they don't declare dividends, they don't declare profits. That said, we did our own independent investigations and established the following, that the Ethiopian Airlines made a systematic anomaly by not registering our own airlines. For example, we use ET, which means that all the air ticket sales are collected by Ethiopian Airlines in Ethiopia. That means if we are to recover that money, we are subjected to 10% collection fee, a thing that could have been avoided if Ethiopian Airlines was kind enough to register our own flight code, for example, or let's say MW. And now, the other issue is, apart from the amount that was invested through Air Malawi, up to this hour, we don't have a flight of our own. And we are also contributing what is known as management fee every month. As taxpayers' money, we are paying Ethiopian airlines.
What will your organization do with the audit report if the government heeds, or if your call is heeded to? What will your organization do with the report?
It is important, because we are asking ourselves again as a candidate to say, we are having a perennial acute shortage of foreign exchange. Why is it like that when actually we have got entities that are, for example, in the business of selling air tickets globally, which are not sold in the local currency? Obviously, by doing the needful, then as a country, we stand to benefit. One, this is a business that's supposed to benefit Malawians. Secondly, the monies that are involved, they are not in local currency. This is a foreign currency. So, obviously, any income, it will lessen the pressure on Malawi Revenue Authority taxing individuals, taxing Malawi. So we surely need this money. This is why we are saying we want this information.
Namiwa, what do you say to critics who are of the opinion that this is yet another example of NAMIWA and its organization always thinking that somebody is doing something bad to the detriment of the public.
I don't want to be in their shoes. You should ask them. But what you are doing here is just a noble cause. We call it social accountability. Section 12 of the Republican Constitution is very clear that those people exercising their power, they do so on delegated basis. We just brought them the powers. But they have to do decisions that are in the best interest of Malawians. They have to protect Malawians.
Sylvester NAMIWA is Executive Director of the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. In Ivory Coast, Egypt's Football Federation says Mohamed Salah, the Liverpool legend, is set to miss two matches at the ongoing African Nations Cup or AFCON due to a hamstring injury. He suffered the injury during the game between the Pharaohs of Egypt and the Black Stars of Ghana, which ended in a 2-2 draw. The news, soccer enthusiasts say, allays fears that the soccer star's injury was not as significant as originally thought, which led to his substitution during the last game. For the latest development about the ongoing AFCON, we are joined live by VOA's Mugbil Yabaru, who is on a special assignment to cover the tournament in Ivory Coast. Hello, Mugbil.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
I'm well. Thank you. How are you? So tell me, what matches were played today?
All right. I'm doing well. Algeria and Burkina Faso just finished up. It was an excellent game, to say the least. Burkina Faso scored the first goal. Algeria tied it. And then a goal that was scored, a penalty kick by Burkina Faso, put them up 2-1. And they literally had the game from the 70th minute. But a 95th minute equalizing goal by the first Algerian goal scorer, Bagdad Bounedjadj. He has two goals in the game, and he finished it off, was able to get a very, very big draw for Algeria. Algeria now in the group is in second place with two draws. Burkina Faso is sitting at the top with one win and one draw.
Well, earlier, Cape Verde defeated Mozambique 3-0, and then Senegal defeated Cameroon by 3-1. What are your thoughts on those games?
Yeah, absolutely. Cape Verde and Senegal were huge, huge winners yesterday in their games. Cape Verde wins 3-0 versus Mozambique. Mozambique looked very, very strong in their first initial game against Egypt, but for some reason, maybe the Cape Verdeans got something else, man. I remember I went to one of their first training camps, and I mentioned this to you earlier on an earlier segment, that the difference, I think, between Cape Verde and some of these other teams have been that when I watch their trainings, it's as if they're training in like game speed. So sometimes, you know, you have teams that kind of just go through the motion of practice, but these guys were really playing at a high and very intense pace, very game-like, so that, you know, they can be ready for game time situations. And it really has shown. They have two wins. They are sitting at the top of their group, very pretty, and they will be playing against Ghana for their last game. So for them, they're sitting very, very comfortably at the very top. So who's to say, you know, and see basically what it is that they end up doing. So we'll see. No, I believe, I'm sorry, they play they do not play Ghana. They will be playing a third game against Egypt. They'll be playing against Egypt, but most likely they may be resting some of their big wig guys, their big players, simply because with 6 points, they are already through, and they might not want to get injuries, as you just spoke about, Mohamed Salah being injured for Egypt. So it would make the most sense for them to just rest some of their big guys.
Mugbil, has the ticketing issues been fixed? Because it appears that there are more fans in the stadiums at the moment.
Yeah, Peter, great question. I think for the most part, it seems like there's been some kind of a fix now. To the extent of the fix, we don't know yet, but we do see more fans in these respective stadiums. You know, there's nothing wrong with ticket sales being sold out. That's an amazing thing. But having ticket sales being sold out and then you looking at the stadium and not seeing it being sold out seems to have been the consensus issue across Ivory Coast. So now with that being said, the last couple of games, if you looked into the crowd, for the most part, there was a substantial amount of fans in there. So those are all very, very good signs. I remember when I was in that Egypt-Ghana match, there were no seats nearby. There were individuals actually who were trying to get to their seats, but their seats were so deep in that they just didn't even want to even go through the hassle, and they were just sitting on the sides of the stairs until the ushers came in and told them that they couldn't sit there.
Well, now, upcoming games, Angola versus Mauritania playing later today. Tunisia takes on Mali. What are your quick thoughts before you go, Mugbeil?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mauritania and Angola, two must wins for both teams. Angola had drawn their first game. Mauritania lost in their first game to Burkina Faso very late. If either of these teams are able to get a win, that would put them right above Algeria, because Algeria has two draws. So I think both teams will come out with a lot of, you know, aggression and a level of desperation that you have to play with to make sure that you're in a very comfortable situation going into game three. As for Tunisia, Tunisia also is in a very, very desperate type of situation, simply because they ended up playing Namibia, and Namibia was able to beat them. And that was something that was very unexpected, one of the biggest shockers of the tournament so far. And Mali got a 2-0 victory over South Africa. They're sitting at the top. If they're able to beat Tunisia, they will be sitting even further atop. So I think it's key for both teams to try to pull off this win.
Thank you very much, Mugbeil. That was VOA's Mugbeil Yabaro, who is on a special assignment to cover the AFCON in Ivory Coast. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Abidjan. Officials in Cameroon say they are again forcing several thousand children who have been working for a living back to school. The government says most of the children were displaced by armed conflict in surrounding countries and refused to quit their jobs because they say they are hungry. For VOA Moki, Edward Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Goats and sheep bar as 14-year-old Jubairo Umar leads the animals out of their barn at a ranch in Garoua Boulaye, a town on Cameroon's border with the Central African Republic. Cameroon government officials say in 2014, Jubairu fled with his mother from Gwen, a village in the southwestern CAR, after a rebel attack left scores. Jubairu says his mother's health deteriorated 3 years after they arrived in Garoua Boulaye, and he began working at a cattle ranch. Jubairu says he gets out of bed at 5 a.m. every day and moves sheep and goats from their barn to the pasture fields. So when schools resumed for the second time Tuesday, a majority of the children had returned to ranches and mining sites. Jubairu said he and many of his peers are aware that education is very important, but cannot return to classes because they are very poor and hungry. Moki, Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
The families of the 136 Israeli hostages still being held in Gaza say time is running out to bring their loved ones home alive. But any deal with Hamas will probably mean ending the war in Gaza, which Israeli leaders say is not an option now. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Noah Argamani, who was filmed by Hamas kidnappers pleading for her life at the Nova Music Festival on October 7th, has become a symbol of the 136 hostages still in Gaza. This week, Argamani was featured in a Hamas-affiliated video begging the Israeli government to stop the war in order to save the hostages. She describes how she was wounded and two other hostages were killed by Israeli airstrikes, and the video ends with purported images of these dead hostages. Israeli officials say the video is Hamas propaganda, which cannot be trusted, but they are trying to verify whether the hostages were in fact killed by Israeli airstrikes or by their Hamas captors.
Stop this madness.
While we are still alive. Noah Argamani's mother is gravely ill with terminal cancer and has pleaded with Israeli and world leaders, including President Biden and the Red Cross, to help her see her daughter before she dies. Because Liora is a dual Israeli-Chinese citizen, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has even asked the Chinese government to intervene with Hamas. The families of other young Israeli women being held hostage in Gaza fear they may be subjected to continuous abuse, including sexual assault by their Hamas captors. Yardane Gorin, sister of hostage Romy Gorin, is terrified by what she heard from female hostages who were released.
Every minute something can happen. Every minute they can decide to harm them, to abuse them mentally, physically, sexually, and they're helpless. What can they do against that, you know? They can't even resist because it could cost them their lives.
In November, Hamas freed more than 100 out of the original 240 hostages in exchange for a temporary ceasefire and release of some 240 Palestinian prisoners. However, now Hamas has said that it will only free more hostages in exchange for a complete ceasefire. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has repeatedly said that Israel remains committed to both destroying Hamas and freeing the hostages. But some hostage family members say those two goals have become incompatible. Jonathan Dekelchen's son Sagi is a hostage in Gaza.
My kibbutz alone, about 10 hostages have been declared dead over the course of the last month. Their bodies, their remains still with Hamas. We don't want that to continue. We want the hostages home by whatever means necessary.
The only hostage deal which has been reached in the last 50 days is an agreement for Qatar and the Red Cross to supply medicines for the hostages in the coming days. But family members fear that this gesture will not be enough to keep their loved ones alive. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has reiterated the need for a pathway to a Palestinian state, saying Israel will not get genuine security absent that. Blinken said the mindset of leaders in the Arab and Muslim world has changed on integrating Israel into the region and that he feels a fierce urgency because, quote, we are in the midst of what is human tragedy in so many ways in the Middle East right now for the Israelis and Palestinians alike. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke with Ori Neer, spokesperson for Americans for Peace Now, about the U.S. push for a Palestinian state.
Yes, I think that the United States really does see an opportunity here. You know, every war should have some kind of a diplomatic or a political, I should say, objective at the end of it. The use of military force just to use it for tactical reasons is, I think most people would agree, a waste. It's a waste in human life. It's a waste of in other ways and so on. So the United States, rightly so, I think, the White House sees an opportunity here to capitalize on this use of force and leverage it toward a goal that the United States has for more than three decades now been trying to achieve, which is a two-state solution.
Saudi Arabia's foreign minister, Prince Faisal bin Farhan, said his country agreed with that and regional peace includes peace for Israel, but that can only happen through peace for Palestinians through a Palestinian state. Would that change the mindset in Israel?
It's a very good question, and it's hard to tell. On the one hand, yes, Israelis definitely want to normalize relations with Saudi Arabia and with other countries, and there is a pretty large minority. It is a minority, but there's a large minority in Israel of people who genuinely support the two-state solution. The problem is that for many Israelis, October 7th proved or serves to prove that a two-state solution is too much of a threat. And the threat would be that something similar to what happened in the Gaza Strip, in other words, terrorists crossing the border into Israel's into sovereign Israel, would happen coming from the West Bank, if the West Bank turns into a Palestinian state. And that is something that Netanyahu is using now, and it's something that would be, I think, pretty difficult to dissuade Israelis from that perception.
Blinken said Israelis would need to decide on its leadership and its direction, saying it's up to them whether the country can seize the opportunity that we believe is there, and calling this an inflection point for the Middle East that requires hard decisions. However, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu leads a right-wing government that is opposed to a Palestinian state, and Netanyahu himself recently said that his actions over the years prevented the formation of such a state. What are the prospects of peace now?
Boy, it's a really interesting question, and I think that it has to do with the prospects of Netanyahu staying in power. What I mean by that is that under Netanyahu, I think it would be impossible, particularly under this government, this coalition that he put together, it would be impossible to really make a breakthrough toward a Palestinian state. I think that what the United States is trying to do here, and what perhaps, not, I'm quite convinced actually, that its allies in the region are trying to do, is to set the stage and to induce the fall of this government, the fall of this coalition, so that a new coalition could be elected, headed by someone who is more open and cooperative in a process that would lead to a two-state solution. But what we're seeing at the moment, I think, is a real crisis between the White House and Netanyahu. The U.S. sees this as an opportunity for a diplomatic breakthrough, as we discussed earlier, toward a two-state solution. Netanyahu, however, views this as an opportunity for a breakthrough away from a two-state solution, a breakthrough that would bolster his support within his base. And I think that that's where we stand now. What the U.S. is basically saying, I think, if I can interpret the statements that we've been hearing from the White House, is if not under Netanyahu, then, well, the Israeli public will have to take some hard decisions, I'm saying, to get rid of Netanyahu so that a new leader could be elected who would lead Israel toward peace.
That was Ori Ner, spokesperson for Americans for Peace Now. He spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shinawi. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Klote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, and right now it's time for music from our African collection.
It's Masterell on the beat, baby.
Money since I was 13, try to be rich before 30. 30 billion in my mind, no one can stop me. Cause I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler. I work hard every day, 9 to 5 just to get my daily bread. Pray hard every day, asking God to bless my way. Troubles may come my way. Trials may come my way, but I keep on doing my thing. Nothing will knock me down, down, down. Nothing will knock me down. Depuis le berceau, je visais très haut. Connu dans le réseau pour mes raisons. Gala dans la saison, j'ai pris mes décisions. Moi je veux l'argent pour cette saison. Cause I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler. You never give up, even though things are hard for you. Keep your head up. One day God will come through. Troubles may come my way. Trials may come my way. But I keep on doing my thing. Nothing will knock me down, down. Every
5 just to get my daily bread. Pray hard every day, asking God to bless my way. Cause I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler, I'm a hustler. Troubles may come my way, trials may come my way, but I keep on doing my thing. Nothing will knock me down, down, down. Nothing will knock me down, down, down. Nothing will knock me down, down, down. Nothing will knock me down.
Because myself can't get picky.
Now long story, Uncle. It's
too sorry, oh.
I left you lonely like Monkey Bridge. Tell me you never know.
Me mama died the same day where you born me. You love me, papa. Now ain't no more been to take care. They give me all kind college because I've been there trying to school. You know we get much, but I'm no one to sleep and dream. You struggle for me. Say Alambo. Man can predict well, well.
Look on and get the final say.
Now we think making up continue. Just let me so.
It's so sorry, oh good. No one for member.
Tell me soon it's time. Cause I really want for no.
By the rebel war, rebel they attack the village. I in their home, me. No one for kill me, go me daddy tower. He say no, because it tower. Not before me, they be the torturer. Waiting, I be taking it so take the broken teeth.
When them no say me daddy left me so much, now that's make their heart warm.
Then give them the gun now. They say, well, you can you begin. Where daddy don't watch me, what a run I die. I know be a boss cry for me loving papa. The chuka nai aid give a command, say can you begin. We are seeing blood is splash, so God I nearly faint.
I tell daddy say kill me, if not I no more go save your life.
Daddy look me in the eye. Shaky head and boss cry. Daddy hold the gun in hand, but to God in a fire. Daddy says Sunita, I no get mine for kill you. Make a die with the pain. Once no more your life go on. They kill him before me. They say, well, you baby papa. Oh, what a wicked people.
I've not ever seen a life.
Now this not my problem. Where they can be up and down.
But now, make your soul rest in peace.
I don't say it painful, so later. Do you have good
but now, I know we'll get you kind of game.
What now you reason? Why make it so?
But now, I know we'll get you kind of game.
Music.
And I feel pain on my heart because of your story. Have faith in it and believe in the mighty God. But the way that you go want for to now when you're living tomorrow.
I want for further me education. College could be the best for me. I want for make sure for fulfilled. Me daddy in dream.
Daddy not get to deal. Spirit with me.
I don't get much on it, but I'm gonna try for a few. Instead of just for clowning, I'm gonna try my level best. Let progress on it, and believe in the mighty God.
Papa, oh, make your soul rest in peace.
I don't say it painful, so need to do your all you can.
Papa, oh, I know we'll get you kind of game.
What no you reason? I make it so.
Papa, oh, I know we'll get you kind of gay. Papa, oh, make your soul rest in peace.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer David Vandy and engineer Al Santos, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if a tree does not know how to dance, the world will teach it. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.